Okay, thank you. Who was here for the last presentation? Oh, wow, that's pretty impressive. We have a completely refilled room for a Japan Share event on a totally different topic. And for those of you who came to both, thank you. You get a discount on your next seminar. Please contact Eri Hirano for details. Well, we've been very privileged at CSIS to have one of the most productive fellows we've ever had in Hideki Wakabayashi. He's been a real delight to have here, but also I think a real important voice for Japan, for Asia, for U.S.-Japan relations. If I may say, for the Democratic Party of Japan, although you're here in your own capacity, in Washington at a time of really big questions about what we're going to do with our alliance, questions about how relevant Japan will be, questions of how we will deal with big challenges around the world, how we re-strengthen our alliances, and so on and so forth. So he's been here at a really critical time. Wakabayashi-san came to CSIS, said he wanted to write a new report, a new look at how the U.S. and Japan cooperate as allies in a global context. And we talked it through a number of times. He's had a number of seminars. Nick Setcheny, our fellow at the Japan Share, really took this project on and worked with Wakabayashi-san. And he produced a very impressive report called The U.S.-Japan Alliance, A New Framework for Enhanced Global Security, which everyone should have in front of them. And if you don't, we have copies outside. Wakabayashi-san is no stranger to Washington, of course. He's now a Japan Share Visiting Fellow. He was a member of the House of Counselors in Japan. That's the upper house, representing the DPJ from 2001 to 2007, and served as the Shadow Minister of Economy and Industry and Shadow Vice Minister of Finance, and also the Deputy Director of the International Department of the Party. He was a member in the Diet, in the Upper House, in the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, Humanitarian Reconstruction Support for Iraq Committee, and he's worked on a number of bipartisan efforts, the Parliamentary Network of the World Bank, Global Legislators Alliance for a Balanced Environmental Economy. He's been one of those interesting new Diet members who's really reached out to civil society, not only in Japan, but in Asia and internationally, to effect change and really enhance Japan's soft power. Wakabayashi-san was in the Foreign Ministry. He served here as First Secretary in the Economic Section back from 93 to 96. Very interesting time, a time of trade friction, a time when the Nye Initiative and U.S.-Japan Alliance restarted, and a time when the U.S. and Japan began what's called the Common Agenda, a first real effort to look at how we, the first and second largest economies in the world, work together on transnational challenges, development, and so forth. And he was, I think, the primary officer for that issue in the embassy at the time. He began working in the Yamaha Corporation in 1980. His BA is from Waseda, and he has an MS in agriculture. I actually didn't know this until now. An MS in agriculture from Michigan State. And he's published a number of books, but we think the most important one is this report for CSIS on the U.S.-Japan Alliance. So we'll ask Wakabayashi-san to summarize his report, and we'll open it up for questions and comments. So with no further ado, Wakabayashi-san.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction, Michael Green-sensei, and thank you very much for coming over this event, just a visiting fellows event, and I was very surprised to see that such a big crowd, and it's a great honor to be able to speak among so many wonderful, distinguished participants, specialists, and I'm very fear to speak because we have so many different area specialists right now here in this room. But I try to do my best. And I also thank Nick-san to arrange this meeting and help me to write this very difficult English paper. So thank you very much. If I may be allowed to a little bit exaggeration, I came to the United States just right to this report. And I think U.S.-Japan relations alliance is very, very crucial under the next administration. And whoever wins election, I think this framework should be applicable on both countries. So I would like to explain why this is very important. And just introduce myself, Michael Greensense already did, but it is related to my today's topic. And I used to introduce myself, I'm former everything, because I studied business, and I changed my major, agriculture, science, and I started out working as an office worker at the Yamaha Corporation, and I was actually selling the pianos, music instruments at the retail store only 20 years ago. I never thought I would imagine that I would become a politician, diplomat, and here I am to explain what I'm doing this time. So, but last 15 years, I was involved in U.S. Japan relations, especially as a first secretary here in Embassy Washington, Embassy of Japan here in Washington, dealing with ODA and U.S.-Japan cooperation. He just explained common agenda. And I was a politician, House of Counselor, which is upper house from the DPJ, Democratic Party of Japan. Now, result of the last election, DPJ dominates that upper house, but it's different now. I was 201 to 207. Then I met last November 2007. I met Mr. Paul White, who is here, and he is the director of the USAID in Tokyo at that time. He was kind of my counterpart, and I met him here in Washington last November and discussed what we should do after under the next administration. And we both share some kind of successful experience working on common agenda. And I think this is it. This kind of framework we should apply under the next administration, because it's different age, but still I think, okay, I was inspired by him, and here I am. And I could not have finished this paper without his advice and help. And thank you very much again. And U.S.-Japan Alliance, a new framework for enhanced global security. I would like to talk about four major topics. Why should the two countries cooperate, number one? This is just simple. Why two countries? I was asked a lot of people. There are many different countries, international organizations. Why U.S.-Japan can only work two countries, which I will explain later. And we have had a long history on cooperation on global issues, which I will not get into detail, but I will explain. And promoting regional economic integration, which is kind of a long-term vision we should have before getting to the individual cooperation. Then new framework for enhanced global security is a kind of area that we should work on. So these four topics I would like to explain. And how can we ensure security? This is kind of traditional security I'm talking about. And it is traditional security. You should protect our lives and countries from the military attack. This is traditional security. And I think U.S.-Japan Security Treaty, based on the U.S.-Japan security arrangement, has been very effective, I think. And it has worked for nearly 50 years. And I describe U.S.-Japan security arrangement as a fresh air, oxygen. You cannot see the existence of U.S.-Japan security arrangement, but you breathe every day, every second, independent of U.S.-Japan security. But you never notice the importance of U.S.-Japan security until it's gone. All of a sudden, you're going to have a hard time to breathe. Then, sometime, it's too late. So I think we should focus on more appreciation of U.S.-Japan security arrangement, which is very, very important. But I'm not going to talk about this U.S.-Japan security arrangement today, but I'd like to focus on this is very, very important, which is related to the soft power I'm going to talk about. So this kind of arrangement is very, very important. But nowadays, people are increasingly feeling threatened by other global challenges, which is like this. I think definition of security has changed over time. People feel like food energy crisis, climate change, you know, unusual weather and drought, infectious diseases, HIV/AIDS, and avian flu maybe. And we suffered from some chemical poison. And nowadays, remember that we have had some poisonous dumpling on the right side, milk, and some other things that we are very suffered from. You know, even in the United States, some Chinese toys with chemical in it, and it will cause a lot of disease. And global poverty directly, indirectly affect the security of our life. So I put in that this one is also. And terrorism, of course, and nuclear proliferation is also is another threat. So some of the threats are not new. It has been there for a long time. But people began to be more sensitive to this kind of global challenges. Now, are we prepared to address these issues? Not yet. I think United States and Japan, who share the same value and has been a long ally, should work on together to address these problems, I think. And you know, some of the issues are very transnational. It's impossible to one country to solve this problem, but we two countries should lead to solve this kind of problem. But fortunately, we have already kind of a cooperation framework already. This is fortunate, which is U.S.-Japan security treaty, which sounds might be very surprising to you. Because I look at this treaty, I found out something is missing, which is, it's called mutual security treaty. But real name, official name is treaty of what? Mutual cooperation and security between the U.S.-Japan. A lot of people don't know what mutual cooperation is. I didn't even notice that there was inside it already. But it's better known U.S.-Japan security treaty, but official name is mutual cooperation and security between two countries. And this is just, I'm sorry that this is a Chinese character, 日米安全保障条約. And official name is 日米の間の相互協力. Even I would like to ask some of the diplomats here in Washington, I think this is still wrong, because 日米の間の相互協力安全保障条約 means like a mutual cooperation and treaty of security. Sounds like it's still different. So it's kind of misleading too. So I think actual official name is a mutual cooperation and security between two countries. And mutual cooperation in the treaty is stated like this, the preamble, desiring further to encourage closer economic cooperation and to promote conditional economic stability and well-being in their countries, considering that they have common concern in maintenance of international peace and security is stated in this national security treaty, which we haven't noticed. At least I didn't notice. And the article will contribute towards the further development of peaceful and friendly international rotations, relations by strengthening their free institution. I think this is kind of described soft power. It's originated from the Professor Joseph Nye. Everybody knows this, what soft power is, the ability to influence others. To make them to do what you want. It's kind of direct, indirect influence. And I think it's already there. And I think these two are the mutual cooperation. Ask you to encourage mutual cooperation, economic cooperation, in that under the framework of security. So I think this kind of related to the soft power issues. So it's kind of combined together, create a concept of collective security issue. And soft power and hard power were merged into the smart powers. And I think CSIS has been proposing. So this kind of idea that I think we could address those, not only in the traditional security, but we could also address those global challenges and the threats and other security. So I'd like to bring up this idea and to address this problem. And political necessity for cooperation. Maybe I was a politician, but I'd like to bring up, I feel there necessity for cooperation because common agenda it was a kind of byproduct of trade friction. It served very much But anyway, this time, I think Japanese people are too sensitive about Japan passing, too sensitive. There was an event yesterday, Chicago Council, Iizuka-san was here, and according to the poll conducted by the Chicago Council, said, which country do you think is very important to the U.S.? Do you know the ranking? Japan? Japan is fourth. Okay, fourth, not bad. UK, Canada, but China comes first. Then after Japan is the fourth ranking. I understand. Why after China? It's got to be wrong. It should be third. This kind of image that the Japanese people is kind of shocking data, I think. But definition of importance is kind of different, so I think we shouldn't worry about of course, quality of the relationship is totally different. Of course, it's the U.S. Japan is a democratic country, long-time ally. The other hand, China is still authoritarian country, communist country. It's so different, so we shouldn't worry about it. But it's kind of very sensitive. Japanese people are too sensitive. But next administration, what's going to happen? One is, my observation is U.S.-China relationship will be deepened under the next administration, whoever wins election. Because first year, sometimes very hostile in the administration. Because of the campaign, election has to be hostile. Then first year, it's kind of hostile. But then changed their position next year. But we were able to see during Clinton administration, Bush administration, everything is it's changed. But I think under the next administration, we will still see U.S.-China relationship will be deepened because there are so many reasons that you have to depend on each other. So I'm not going to discuss, you know, already. So another one is narrowly focus on defense issue. I think we have been focusing on a little bit too much on defensive issue last 8 years. We were able to send SDF to Iraq and Indian Ocean. That's good. But sometimes United States is only focusing on Okinawa, U.S. defense cooperation. People might think that, oh, Japan passing, then U.S.-China relationship will be deepened. So I think this kind of image should be changed. I think I would like to see that try to boost public support for the alliance because diplomacy cannot be sustainable without public support, without understanding of U.S.-China relations. That's my experience I have for a long time. So, for example, one hand, there's still high rating of favorable rate to the United States among the Japanese people, like 70-80%, and United States also, which is the highest in the allied country. I think it's good. But the other hand, one hand, for example, what happened to the relocation of Futenma Air Station? It has been sitting there for 12 years since the last SACO agreement in 1996. What's going to happen under the LDP leading government still there? So I think still we should work on more why U.S.-Japan alliance is important, why U.S.-Japan security arrangement is important. So this kind of things we haven't done enough yet. So we need to boost the public support for the alliance, which means that U.S.-Japan alliance has many different dimensions, not only for the U.S.-Japan cooperation, but I think such as U.S.-Japan alliance is to cooperate on global issues, new threats, and trade liberalization. So this kind of dimension that we should work on under the U.S.-Japan alliance, not only the defense, so that will create that U.S.-Japan alliance, U.S.-Japan security is working for the peace and prosperity of the world, not only two countries. This kind of image that we should come up with when we, because 2010 will be 50th anniversary of a U.S.-Japan trade security treaty. So this kind of idea to define, redefine the U.S.-Japan security treaty to come up this kind of idea. So I think this is kind of thing that we need to explain. So, and review of cooperation on global issues, global partnership, common agenda, alliance cooperation. I think we have had a long history in cooperation, but I'm not going to get into the detail. Please read the book later. But every 4-8 years, there's some kind of incident, Berlin Wall fell, which there will be a need for economic reform and addressing environment problem, a common agenda. We have the trade friction to ease trade friction and alliance cooperation, 9/11 terrorist attacks, change the direction of the cooperation. This kind of every 4 or 8 years, some kind of incident we have. But still, I think next administration, we should have some kind of common agenda type broad framework, a cooperation scheme. Under that, we should work on different areas that we can share the same problem. So I think U.S.-Japan cooperation is very, very needed. And I was told by many people that U.S.-Japan, we have done enough cooperation already. Do you think so? Or there are many ongoing cooperation schemes already. Is it so? But my observation is not enough. Because of the depth, degree, scope has not been enough. I was told by many people from American side, it is just only part of the cooperation we have done already. What about the rest of the? For example, Carol Lancaster told us that we need intellectual contribution you haven't done yet. That's not enough. Sending SDF to Iraq, that's not enough. We still have a lot to go to share information, more contribution to intellectual things like this. And what I meant by intellectual contribution is sometimes American people want Japan that Japan should work on respond to the crisis and terrorism. How are you going to do this? On your own initiative, independently, not just following the steps of the U.S. How could do it? But this kind of thing, we haven't done yet. But it seems like we just following. But how are we going to do this and respond to the real crisis and global terror on war? But still a lot to go. And sometimes another question is, I think we should be competitive to the United States to work on a certain issue. It seems very strange, but sometimes you have to be, you know, competitive enough to. That's why United States need America to work with. It's not just don't have to follow the step. Sometimes it has to be competitive. Its ability should surpass sometimes in certain area United States' ability. That's why this kind of cooperation will take place. This kind of idea that U.S.-Japan cooperation is needed. Then two countries cooperate, I think, to lead international community in response to global challenges. I think you understand this already. So two countries should lead international. And I think to strengthen the international organization, which means that, for example, if we work on, for example, U.S.-Japan trade free agreement, we have to work on, try to fit this U.S.-Japan trade agreement into the world trade organized WTO framework. This kind of framework should be harmonized with the international movement instead of just doing by your own, but instead you have going towards more harmonization with international organization. And to inspire other countries, if you work on climate change, United States, Japan, maybe should inspire EU countries and other countries. This is the kind of thing we should work on and, you know, try to respond. Or we should work on, for example, with China, how we address to the environment problem in China. This kind of a cooperation I think we need. And to work with developing countries, I think you understand that the giving assistance to the third country, of course, it's work with a developing country. And I think another one is a trade to bring synergy effect. I found sometimes we were able to come up with a synergy effect because 1 + 1 sometimes makes 3. It's kind of complementary relations. For example, in the case of ODA, we are very good at constructing some infrastructure, which are not allowed to do in the U.S. U.S. side giving more technical assistance to other people. It's combined together to come up with a very big, good project. This kind of idea, the synergy effect, is also is in this U.S.-Japan conference. So, and this is just a new framework of enhanced global security I just described already. But I've just pointed out we should share long-term vision, which is Asia-Pacific Economic Architecture envisioning Asia-Pacific Union, APU, and plus areas for cooperation where we're going to work on specific field. My point is, instead of meeting with daily needs of what we can do, 1 year this, next year this, but instead of this, we should have sometime long-term vision, the direction that we're going to share, which direction we are going to. And I think this kind of idea that this is very, very important. When we had a problem with the United States, well, we're still going to this way. I think this kind of idea that Asia-Pacific economic architecture is one of them. It's not that everything, but I think this is kind of a vision that we'd like to bring up. Then area of cooperation and environment energy, development Africa, nuclear non-proliferation. These are three main areas we should work on. These three areas are equally important. I'm not saying that environment energy comes first, but they're all equally important. And that will smart power, hard power, and soft power will be combined into the smart power, which will lead to world peace and prosperity. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about Asian economic architectures. This is a slide I use for Democratic Party, DP Japan shadow minister meeting, something like this. I was the director of economic diplomacy team, and we came up with some interim report, which was approved by the cabinet, shadow cabinet. This is a long time, mid-21st century. It's way ahead. But Japan is located in between Pacific and Indian Ocean, United States and Asian country and China. I think United States, Japan should work on to create this kind of economic architectures. And I think this is, you might be very surprised to see that this is kind of image that DPJ used to have. This was not approved by official as an official policy, but it was approved by the midterm interim report, and we should go in towards and that was under Mr. Okada Katsuya, was a shadow minister of that age, 2003 or something like this, but he was very favor of free trade system. And Mr. Okada Katsuya might be the next leader of Japan, but in the long run, this is the only way that we should go. And trade free system is the only way for two countries to get benefit from. Of course, we are concerned about the side effects of the trade free trade, but this is kind of thing that we should go move forward. So I think Asian plus three, but at the same time, United States, Canada, and other countries, we should have some kind of free trade agreement. But it is unrealistic, some people said. But we still have, you should have some kind of long-term vision, even though we have an agriculture problem, other thing, issue. But it is important to raise this kind of long-term vision as a party, I think. And free trade agreement is still unrealistic, some people say. I put into the paper because it is strategically important. And I think we should start a research team with bureaucrat, academia, and industry, and even civil society should work on together to what we can do under the U.S.-Japan Free Trade Agreement. And, of course, whoever wins the election, Congress will be dominated by a Democrat, which is kind of a little bit because of financial crisis, economic crisis, a little bit maybe a little bit skeptical to have a new agreement. But in the long run, free trade system is very, very important for both countries. So that's why I brought it this in this paper. And environment energy is very important. First one, everybody knows that I don't have to repeat what we should do. Initiating bilateral ministerial environment forum for cabinet, leading international discussion, developing environment-related technology, providing assistance. These are all you can think of. This kind of very important. The time I'm going to spend to explain doesn't mean that it is not important. Just you know everything already. So, but I just bring up this is kind of thing we need. Mottainai culture. It's sense of regret to use resources. And Mike Sensei knows already that this kind of, I was grew up surrounded by this kind of Mottainai culture. When I was eating lunch or dinner, when I was leaving a single grain of rice, I was scolded by grandmother. This is Mottainai. You should be sorry for farmers. Okay, this kind of momentum we still have, I hope. But in the United States, a little bit different from. But I think there's something that you could learn from the Japanese experience and the Japanese efficiency, energy efficiency rate is one of the highest country. You know that it's more than double compared with United States. But maybe because of the technology, size of the country, but still Mottainai culture really affect to use of how to use of resources. So I think you might be able. But 環境省の方 is 小紫さん. In Japan, it is 28 centigrade. Is recommended room temperature, which is 82.4, right? 82.4 Fahrenheit in the government, business, and this, with humidity, it's just crazy, I think. I understand. but low humidity is fine. But this kind of, I don't think American people tolerate this 82.4 Fahrenheit with humidity in the summertime. But still, I think it's raise your awareness of environment, you know, bring you a notion for conservation thing. So I think this is kind of important we should work on. And development in Africa is very important. I just like this phrase all the time, international security cannot be achieved without improving the lives of people in developing countries. This is true. So international security, you have to keep attention to this development side, and Africa is still core area that we should work on. So I think last 10 years, 15 years, development has been the driving force for U.S.-Japan cooperation. This is true. I was involved in, and still one of the ladies came from, she is still, I'm sorry, exchange program, she is working on USAID, and we have long history to work on the development. But unfortunately, Japanese budget, ODA budget has been decreasing. So I think it's now the time to increase our development. So I think joint project, especially global health and in Africa to achieve MDG is the Millennium Development Goals, which have not been achieved yet. So we still a lot to go. Second one is, I think it's very important, developing strategic project in priority region. Sometimes United States and Japan should choose certain area for poverty reduction, maybe related to terrorism, something like this, to work on strategically some part. I think this is kind of important too. And expanding private partnership project with cooperation and civil society organization. I think last 10 years, we have seen a lot of change. One of the changes is more cooperate with the business community, NGO, the foundation, this kind of idea that we should bring next administration to work on more people involved in this development. And third one is nuclear non-proliferation, which I think is very, very important next administration. And because my sense is Japan is the only country which has suffered from the devastation of nuclear weapon, right? And United States is the only country which actually uses it. So I think both countries know the impact of nuclear weapon, try to work together to avoid nuclear proliferation. I think there are a lot of things that we should work on. Then 2010 NPT review conference is one target we could work on together. And nuclear disarmament is included, this idea of nuclear non-proliferation, but which is, disarmament is different from non-proliferation, but it's still included. And strengthening IAEA and GNEP for nuclear non-proliferation. GNEP is, what is the official? Okay. Thank you very much. This is led by the United States under the Bush administration. Name can be changed, but I think this is idea is very important. Why Nixon is laughing? I'm sorry. Enhancing cooperation in developing nuclear and reprocessing technology for safe and reliable nuclear cycling. I think this is very important because we have had a long history in working in development of nuclear energy. And for example, if you, I understand there are many specialists about nuclear energy. I think my understanding is that there are four types of processing nuclear energy. And two is gas regulated. And one of is used being, by the Iran and other countries. It's a high velocity rotation plus, what do you say, some kind of, it's a cascade, yes. And fourth one is a chemical method. In 1988, Asahi Kasei has done already, but they stopped working on because of the price of uranium is not high enough for feasibility study. They stopped. But uranium cost is like 10 times as much as compared with a couple of years ago. So I think it's high enough. From this process, I think a chemical method is production of highly enriched uranium is inherently difficult. You cannot get more than 5% of enriched uranium with this methodology, chemical. That's why you cannot use, I put in proliferation resistant uranium type of processing. This kind of process, if this is developed, then use for the developing country. There's no way that you can use to combat into the nuclear weapon. So, and also, Japan has been working on reprocessing already. So reprocessing cycling is very, very important and now started in Aomori. So this kind of things that we've been working on, and we might be able to contribute to the nuclear proliferation thing. So, and other possibilities, then I'm not going into many detail. And global food crisis, you understand, emergency humanitarian aid and reconstruction. I just pointed out one thing that I was told by many people that we have done many reconstruction humanitarian aid with the United States already. We showed 2004 tsunami operation in Indian Ocean already. But some people said that because of unfortunate incident in 1992, Antak in Cambodia, one police was killed during that Antak operation. But since then, we haven't done anything civilian organizations like a police and fire department and Coast Guard get involved in this kind of humanitarian aid. They stopped there. So I think people said we could learn from American experience in this reconstruction problem. And counterterrorism, international organized crime is a lot to go. And aging demographic change, you might be surprised to see that why it's there. I think demographic change is kind of a trend of tsunami. You cannot avoid until you hit. So I think Japan is population size decreasing. It's like it says ground zero. And United States is the only country, advanced nation, that keep young. And Nakashima-san maybe explained, 250, 300 million will increase to 400 million. It's only country advanced OECD country, which makes a lot of difference. I think this kind of demographic change will affect economy, security, but we have to analyze what's going to happen to. And in Japan, 2050, median age is 56 years old. 56 years old. And median age of the United States is 39. So it's a big difference. It's like parents and children. And children tend to be wild. Parents tend to be conservative, stubborn, maybe. So it affects U.S.-Japan relationship. So this kind of demographic change we should analyze sometime, in that kind of thing that we should start. And personal exchange program is another important issue that I was at the Mansfield Foundation to speak about Japanese politics. At human face-to-face contact exchange is very, very important. Even though how much IT technology has advanced, we should have some kind of always human-human contact exchange. I think, for example, Congress people, Senate, should have some kind of exchange program with the Diet members, policy-centered exchange. It's not just exchange, just policy we should exchange. For example, in the developed country, we should have some kind of systematic Peace Corps and JOCB cooperation with the other Korean countries and other things that we should work on this systematically. This kind of personal exchange program is very, very important. And conclusion, integration and best mix of soft power and hard power is very important. Again, hard power shouldn't be underestimated or overlooked. I think soft power is very important as well as hard power. And I think human security from climate change, poverty reduction, might be able to reduce the possibility of domestic conflicts or even terrorism. Then soft power can reduce the need to use hard power, and that's the possibility of war. I think soft power, if soft power precedes in advance, if soft power is successful, that will reduce the need to use hard power. I think this kind of ideas. Then bilateral cooperation then will result in world peace and prosperity. Then U.S.-Japan relationship will remain strong and be viewed as a public good. So I'd like to conclude my presentation by saying that I think, again, U.S.-Japan cooperation is very, very needed. And I think everybody in this room are major players under the U.S.-Japan cooperation. So from not only government, business people, media, NGOs, academics, and researchers, everybody should get on the board, on the bus of U.S.-Japan cooperation, which is bound for world peace and prosperity. I think we have to make this bus ready for the next year. Thank you very much for attention.
Wakabayashi-san, thank you. That was energetic and well thought through, and I bet you sold a lot of pianos for Yamaha. I've liked this report and I like the study because it's comprehensive. It looks at all. You don't have to be an idealist. You can be a realist and like this report because it looks at all aspects of Japan's national power technology, development assistance, ideas, economic diplomacy, and it's a very comprehensive vision for how we harness our national assets of national power together to make a difference. And I think you've presented that well. And I like the fact that you, you know, you're very clear. This is not somehow a shift away from or downplaying hard power or defense issues. I have to say, just as a small factoid, you know, I was on the NSC staff for 5 years working on Japan. Probably 80% of what President Bush and Prime Minister Koizumi talked about were not defense, maybe more. Probably 80% of what Rich Armitage talked to his counterpart in the strategic dialogue was about was not defense. Even if you read the joint statements the two leaders put out, I bet if you counted the words, probably only 20% would be defense. The problem was what was happening in defense was such big controversial news. Okinawa bases, you know, ships to the Indian Ocean, ground self-defense forces in Iraq, that no matter what was discussed or said, that was the headline. You do a much better job explaining than we did in the government this more comprehensive vision. You also add a lot of new elements. Maybe we need to do more of the kind of software you use with the moving pieces and the like a manga or anime. It's very effective. And we do have an opportunity with APEC in Japan in 2010, with the 2010 60th anniversary of the treaty. We do have an opportunity to sort of represent this comprehensive vision and really energize cooperation across the board. But the one thing I want to ask you is, how would you, as a member of the opposition party and knowing a lot about the press and having worked on Common Agenda, how would you sell this vision to the public in both countries? One answer would be to have you go around and give this talk every day for 2 years. But maybe you have other plans. So if you were advising, the future prime minister or president, how would you energize and captivate and involve the public and the press and the Congress and the Diet in this kind of vision? So that it doesn't just, again, become kind of, you know, a government exercise and the press once again focuses only on the kind of controversial or defense issues. Do you have some ideas on that?
Yes, I think it's a very important question. How are we going to sell this kind of ideas? And everybody understand, I think, U.S.-Japan alliance and relationship is very, very important. I think under the, if next administration come into power, and what's going to happen, I don't know, next general election, what Japanese politics will be. But there will be a new government. And every 4 and 8 years, new government starts. I think we should have some kind of framework. Then you can actually feel the importance of U.S.-Japan alliance anyway. So I'd like to come up with some kind of summit meeting to come up with a broad agreement. This is the area that we should work on to address all issues, more collective approach to secure life and protect your country is good for peace and prosperity of the world. So this kind of idea that it's good for not only for two countries, it's good for the peace and prosperity of the world, entire world. This kind of idea that Japanese people is kind of in favor of this kind of idea, and so as in the United States. So and at that time, I think if you come up with other good ideas, I'm like welcome.
Good. Well, let's hear some good ideas or questions for Wakabayashi-san. I think we have microphones as well. Yes, sir.
I commend you for a very comprehensive.
Are you Mr. White?
Yes.
Okay.
A very forward-looking document.
Yes. Thank you. I want to comment on just a couple of things. One was on the concept of the Motenai culture, because I think it's a generational thing. People my age probably grew up. I know I grew up with my mother telling me, unless you eat every bean on that plate, don't think about getting up from the table. And her comment was always, remember the starving children in China and Africa. So I think you used a lovely, lovely phrase, a sense of regret for lost opportunities or in energy, for instance, for use of an energy. I think that we all that are involved in some way in U.S.-Japan relations should have that sense of regret for lost opportunities to cooperate together, for the 1+1=3. And we've had lots of examples of that, not just in ODA, but in many areas of cooperation. The question is, how do you underscore those successes and let that be a driver for the relationship? How do you make the successes more visible so that they become something that we all want to strive for, so that we all have that sense of regret when we don't cooperate together? So my question is, how do we make successes more visible and make those a driver for this new relationship?
Another tough question. I think next corporate framework should get a lot of people involved in, not only government. And I think engagement, involvement is very, very important. Even every single person could be attend this U.S.-Japan cooperation kind of idea that what can do, what you can do by yourself to prosperity of the world. You have to have something you can do. I think everybody just getting, you know, look at the world, try to avoid inward looking to work for the peace and prosperity of the world. I think this kind of ideas, a lot of different layers just get involved in. And second one is I think we need media people that sometimes only failing ODA project can be paid attention to by the media. And I was asked so many times, is there any failing projects lately? But we've been working on more positive project a lot, but which doesn't have attraction from the media. So I think I would like to media people to pay attention more positive way, which is really helpful for the peace and prosperity of all. This kind of thing, get together to work on these ideas. And I think there are many specialists that they have ideas.
It's a good question. How do you capture the imagination? And in my NSC staff hat, I'm thinking, how would you staff a summit for a multi-Nai culture? And my first thought was, well, you'd have, for example, Prime Minister Okada and President McCain have lunch, and you'd invite the TV cameras in, and when McCain didn't eat all his food, you'd have Okada say, oi, motenai. But that might not be good for overall relations between the leaders. But, you know, think about the summit that, or the trip that President Bush and Prime Minister Koizumi took to Graceland. Now, that was especially unusual, but you can imagine the President and the Prime Minister having a carbon zero summit, which is pretty hard for the U.S. president because usually he travels with two C-17s full of Secret Service. So it's easier to do it here. But some kind of carbon neutral summit and then together touring schools or high energy efficient facilities in Japan, if it's in Japan. And, you know, you could build events around this that would really get press attention and if you had that overall approach going in. So it's a good question and it's worth thinking further about. Please, Tom.
Hi, Tom, back to Tokyo Mitsubishi. Thank you, Wakabayashi-san, for the presentation. It comes to the little specific for the agriculture reform in Japan. It's if we talk about the FTA, EPAs between the United States and Japan, always comes up the agriculture is the big wall. We cannot, kind of a discussion always stops before agriculture reform is coming. So I'd like to ask your idea, some idea how to change or reform the agriculture in Japan. My take is, I think as you, Wakabayashi-san, described that Iron Triangle in some other think tank recently, and agriculture is typical for the Iron Triangle. But, whatever you think, it's from a politician side or a bureaucrat side or the agriculture industry or a farmer side, whatever the idea you have for this agriculture reform in Japan.
Thank you very much for asking another tough question. I think as far as agriculture reform concern, sentiment of DPJ, LDP members is kind of same. When it comes down to the agriculture reform, everybody just stay away from, don't touch, and we handle this kind of lobby people protecting this kind of... But we, I think it's too sensitive. I think political power, agriculture sector has a lot, but it's much more than enough we've been paying too much attention to. But, of course, agriculture sector is very, very important from the environment aspect is also very needed. But we need to... What we need is not protection. We need a competitiveness policy, trade policy. When you look at the food security, you have to have come up with whole comprehensive approach to let people have enough food. So I understand that agriculture is important, but we are dependent on trade, other issues. How do you secure our interests overall? So this kind of comprehensive approach is, I think, is still needed. And in agriculture sector, whether or not we have agreement FTA with other country, they will collapse if this kind of protectionist policy will continue. Everybody knows. I think it's about time. Whether or not we have a trade agreement, we should move forward to agriculture reform, I think. Any other... everybody has this kind of skeptical when we say free trade agreement. You have agriculture. How do you respond to it? I was told American people. But, of course, Ozawa-san's policy is free trade. And it's kind of compensation income system should be inserted. So price is the same, but still you're paid by the government to to compensation income system, which is not persuasive to a lot of people. But I think Ozawa-san is kind of in favor of free trade. But I think you have a lot of comments on these issues.
No, it's a tough question, and there's an election coming at least sometime soon in Japan, and it's hard to see how anyone would move on that beforehand. But there was an FTA chapter an agriculture chapter in the Japan-Australia FTA, and so some seeds have been planted. But you're right, it's a hard one. Thank you for your comments. Other questions? Paige?
Thank you. I'm Paige Cottingham Streeter from the Mansfield Foundation. Thank you for your presentation, and it's nice to have this dialogue. Maybe 15 years ago, we wouldn't have been focusing on this issue. And my question has to do with how organizations like the Mansfield Foundation, which are non-governmental, can work with government organizations and other entities. Because my observation is that when we talk about counterparts, the Japanese diet, for example, functions and operates a bit differently than the U.S. Congress. And within the Japanese government and the U.S. government, the role of the bureaucrats is different. And the development of civil society organizations in Japan is a little different than it is here in the U.S. And so I see that we may have similar interests in taking on these issues, but the way that we operate or our levels of maturity may be so different that it may not be as simple and easy as it seems. So I'm wondering if you have thoughts on how civil society organizations in the U.S. can cooperate with either others in the U.S. or outside of the U.S. as well. Thank you.
Your question is how we could work on this kind of exchange program when we have a different structures, different organization, different budget system. Yes, there is difference. We still have to work on the based on some kind of difference. I think Japanese NPO movement has not been a little bit not mature stage yet if you compare it with United States. This has to do with some Japanese social structures. And it's totally different from the United States Japanese because of the form of the country, that the history is different. And I think when you look at the difference, we should admit both this kind of difference between two countries. But what we could do is try to learn from the United States. That's why last 10 years we have seen a lot of NGO and NPO movement towards more inside and creating civil society organization, which has been changing a little bit. But it will take a time. But if you come up with some specific idea, please let that members, other people try to. This kind of thing should be improved, some kind of thing. But I don't think I have answered your question. But it's very tough. Yeah. Yes.
This question came up earlier today in a meeting I had with the Japanese government official, and they were asking how do we get civil society more involved between the U.S. and Japan on. On issues like climate change or development and so forth. And I just blurted this out without thinking about it, but I'll say it to you all now. I said maybe in future when there are seminars and conferences on issues, global issues like we did last Thursday here at CSIS on development, on climate change, maybe it ought to be a kind of requirement to have a civil society representative from each country in the debate. Because you know, I've been in a lot of these over the years, and more often than not, it's policy wonks and academics debating development or climate change, and you often don't have civil society representatives or grassroots activists. And it would probably be enlightening for the policy wonks and to some extent empowering or at least create connections for civil society. So this person got very excited, and then I said, but not on nuclear weapons issues. Not on security issues. I don't want to don't want to do that. Oh.
Please. Yeah.
Hello, Keiko Izuka from the Brookings Institution. I really respect your comprehensive work. I think it would contribute to the bilateral relations and the peace and security of the world. And having said that, and I would like to ask a very specific question since you are from the DPJ. I understand that the DPJ has just released a preliminary manifesto for the next general election, saying that, insisting that they're abolishing or revising the SOFA treaty and not agreement, and decreasing the host nation support, which bolsters the stationing of U.S. military bases. I think that DPJ is, or the Mr. Ozawa's policy, his current policy is quite, it's quite negatively working for this kind of arrangement. And I would like to hear your observation of how the DPJ will move on after this. And I think this is somehow related to Dr. Green's question, how do you sell this idea to those policymakers and lawmakers in Japan? And one more thing is that if Japan, I think this is a question for Dr. Green, that if Japan is, its confusion still continues after the new administration on the U.S. side launches, how would the U.S. react with all these good ideas and thoughts on the floor and on the table, but the reality would not work like that. I would appreciate your comment. Thank you.
And Izuka-san asked me, what was the first one? Abolish what?
SOFA.
Chikyote. Okay. And decrease host nation support. I have nothing to do with DPJ officially, but I was former DPJ member. I don't know what to say. It's totally different from my opinion is different from Ozawa-san. But as long as public party DPJ proposed this idea, they have to ask the voters if it's good or not. If people don't support, they don't get administration. that's what's going to happen. We will see. But I think both parties know that the U.S.-Japan alliance is very important. And as far as host nation support is concerned, this year is the first time DPJ flew against it this year. Because I was told that DPJ pointed out some wasting resources, mottainai, something like this. And they U.S. side didn't change anything significantly. That's why they opposed something like this. And their Chikyote and SOFA, might have a problem, which I haven't examined yet. So total different party that it's very natural to propose this kind of idea, which I think is very comfortable to me, but we will see. But when you be in power, comes in power, you have to face reality of what we have to do. So the DPJ is in power, they will learn how they're going to handle based on the opinion of voters. So if it's the same, there's no choice. But as far as foreign policy is concerned, we shouldn't have much difference between two parties. Yes.
You had a question for me. I think if the DPJ does come to power, they will quickly try to find a way to have a study on SOFA revision or some face-saving way out of it, because as soon as they look at the implications, it's going to be the last thing they want to do. Because when you open that Pandora's box, it's a bilateral agreement, it's a treaty. And the U.S. Congress and the U.S. side may have a few things that they'd like to change too. And I think very quickly, in my view, a DPJ government would try to find some face-saving. Host nation support's harder because the public can see it either goes up or it goes down. It's very obvious. There's a winner and a loser in the numbers. And I think it's unfortunate that the DPJ has decided to make this an issue, but not surprising, it's a popular issue. And the way out of that one may be, again, there are ways that host nation support is done that are not very efficient from a U.S. perspective, that are done that way because base-related labor unions benefit. So if the DPJ would like to change the way we do host nation support to improve efficiency, I think the U.S. side would say, great, let's have a little more competition. And then the base union would, and Ringo would go right to the DPJ and say, so, a certain amount of this, and it happens in our country too. When you're in the opposition, you sort of propose things that are popular, but when you come into government, the trick is how do you find face-saving ways to avoid self-destruction? And I think that the next Japanese government, after there's an election, DPJ-led or LDP is going to, the voters in Japan are going to want a credible U.S.-Japan alliance. So I think Wakabayashi-san's vision and presentation really helped to forge a consensus and helped to forge support. You asked about confusion in the U.S. After the election. You mean confusion in the U.S.?
Japan.
Oh, Japan's political confusion. Well, I mean, the advantage of Wakabayashi-san's proposal is it's comprehensive, it's visionary, it really can capture the imagination of all the stakeholders. And that's one important thing for the Japanese side to come with ideas on areas where they can take action. And there are a lot of areas in here that are not politically controversial in Japan, where Japan has real ideas, real contributions that will be positive for a McCain or Obama administration. So this is part of the answer. But I'm going to sound like a curmudgeon, but hard power does matter. And a new administration is going to come in. And at the last G7 meeting in Hokkaido, Japan was the only one of the G7 countries that didn't have anybody on the ground, JICA, but any boots on the ground in Afghanistan. A new administration is going to come in, and there are going to be real challenges and things that are deeply unpopular in kind of countries like Canada or Britain, where risks are being taken in places like Afghanistan or elsewhere. And a new administration is going to ask, well, why isn't Japan taking that kind of risk? And I'm not arguing Japan has to send self-defense forces, but there are going to be some basic security challenges where the Japanese government will be judged by the new U.S. government. And I'm not sure what the right answer is, but this vision has to go on top of some basic reliability as an ally. And both have to happen. And I think Wakabayashi-san makes that very clear in his paper. And this really helps to build that larger vision so that you can help to sell the harder decisions that many people at senior levels will judge Japan on as an ally, and that Japan will judge the U.S. Japan will judge us on North Korea and things, and we need to get all of that right.
Yeah. No. Yeah, oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Microphone.
So Captain Takahashi, so Japan Maritime Civil Defense Force Exchange Officer to U.S. Naval Academy and the Political Science Department Instructor of the Academy. So my question is a very basic question. So you already introduced the many areas for cooperation for both countries, so which enhances or maintains the U.S.-Japan relationship. So I agree with you. And to Japanese, all area is very important, you know, to for that. So, you know, all areas can be done by the cooperation between two nations under U.S.-Japan arrangement, security arrangement or alliance. So to American, to U.S. people, so why Japan? I mean, you know, there are a lot of area for cooperation, but U.S. can choose some other country as a counterpart, or some American people might think this cooperation area can be area for the multilateral cooperation rather than bilateral cooperation. So maybe...
You may have noticed, Wakabayashi-san, last Thursday when we did our conference here on global issues and cooperation between the U.S. and Japan on global issues, one very good speaker and real expert on climate change got up on this in this conference on U.S.-Japan relations and said the most important thing is we have to cooperate with China on climate change. So, you know, it's a good question. How do we animate the next administration to think this is something we do with Japan?
I think it's very natural for the United States to choose other countries instead of Japan. That's fine. I'm talking about in general, but two countries who share the same value and who has been long ally should lead certain areas. That's why I chose only three areas. I didn't expand. Yes. And Komo Agenda expanded 20 different areas, which create too much expectation, which we couldn't address. So that's why only three areas that absolutely we should work, and we have an advantage to work on this.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Jerry Hyman at CSAS. Thank you very much for your paper and your presentation, Wakabayashi-san. Do you have any thoughts about India and China and U.S.-Japan cooperation on those two countries? It seems to me that, I mean, I don't know why people had China number three. Perhaps it's because of the trade issues between the U.S. and China. But it seems to me that a maybe more sophisticated answer, which maybe wasn't in their mind, is that unless we can get China as an important cooperative partner in the international system, you could have a really serious problem in the international system. If it becomes self it becomes defeated, morose, feeling that everyone is against it and so on, we could have a very negative China. And it seems to me that our challenge is to make sure that China becomes, and India too, a positive force in international relations. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about how U.S. and Japan could cooperate to try to make that happen so that China is a productive member of the international community and not... We did some really serious problems in Russia, I think, and we now have the consequence of a Russia that is a problem for everybody. How can we avoid that, and do you think there's any possibility of cooperating on Japan and on China and India?
Yes, U.S.-Japan cooperation is, again, not for two countries, just lead international community. and inspire China and India to bring them into international community, which is fine. And we don't have to gang up against China, not necessary to do so. So we like to have good cooperation. But U.S. Sometimes Japan and U.S. have same target, same value that, for example, in the case of environment issue, a lot of things that we can work together. Of course, China have to be sit on the driver's seat, this kind of idea. So it depends on the case, what we can do. It depends on the area that we should work on. But certainly India and China is the most, one of the important countries that we could work on. So if you come up with some idea, please, I'd like to hear your opinion about U.S.-Japan relations. So.
Yes, sir, in the back.
My name is Young Keel, currently Georgetown University Visiting Scholar. I'd like to ask Mr. Wakabayashi's view on what I call six-party talks in stalemate and the non-proliferation issue you mentioned as one of the areas where U.S. and Japan must cooperate. Now, my reading is that North Korea is not happy over Japanese not providing heavy fuel oil, that in the process Japan may lose its leverage because now without, let's say, either governmental or private donation to match the quota of heavy fuel oil up to 1 million tons and at least 200,000 tons. If Japan refuses to not provide, then the right can go something some other countries like Australia, as it is mentioned in the media. So what is your personal view and analysis of this six-party talks going into some kind of difficulty because of the Japanese official position on the matter?
As you understand, that the abduction issue is very important for the Japanese people and the government. And we have had agreement already that as long as they are violating this kind of agreement, we are not in position to move forward economic assistance. That's a general case. But at the same time, nuclear threat is more, I think, my personal opinion, is more important. So we should work on together. I don't know how I could manage that to political reason, but Japan should get into the center of the denuclearization of Korean Peninsula because, again, Japan is the only country who suffer from. You have to show your spirit to solve this kind of problem to the world. So I think I understand the political reason very much because I was a politician, but at the same time, Japan should be in the center of this kind of negotiation, even put pressure on China, even pressure on the U.S. and other countries we should do. So I understand it's very politically difficult question, but how we could move forward to denuclearization of Korean Peninsula, which is very important, which is very important to the national Japanese security issue. So I think we should move for a little bit towards economic assistance in this issue also. And Bruce-san is gone already. So.
Oh, yeah. Wakabayashi-san, thank you very much. This, you know, in think tanks, you can make an impact with a good idea, or you can make an impact by really bringing together and building consensus on a way forward. And your report does both. It has great ideas, good specifics, and it really, I think, is a document that a lot of people in the U.S.-Japan relationship can be attracted to and look at as a way to work together in a new administration. So, and you've been very productive. And is Nick still here? And we should thank Nick Sacheni for working on this with you and bringing together the study groups and also organizing today's briefing and presentation. So you'll be around a little bit longer. So people can continue sending specifics and good ideas, and we'll keep moving forward with this great agenda. Thank you very much.